Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 29. And this is with Black Pigeon Speaks. So I think everyone knows him. He started his channel. He was on last year's Millennial, and he started his channel at the start of that year, 2016, I believe. So hello, Black Pigeon Speaks.
Hello, Millennials, and Merry Christmas to you. Or how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I mean, honestly, I was a wee bit down in the dumps with everything that was going on prior to Millennial, but now that it's, I think that Millennial has definitely made me feel better, and I hope that it's made a lot of other people feel better as well. I think it has. I think it's had a good effect on the community.
Good. I mean, I'm really enjoying it, you know. So, I mean, I was just saying to you before we went live, you're a machine, my friend.
It's honestly not that difficult. I mean, this is the middle. I think I've done 7 nights, and this is the 8th night, and then there'll be another 7 nights after this. So this is like exactly halfway through, and it's really not that difficult. I wasn't sure how it was going to be, but it's 2 hours between each hangout and between each two hangouts, and it's fine. You know, that's time to do everything that's necessary and recharge in between. So it's fine. I'm surprised by how it's not wearing me out, to be honest. Certainly after the fourth one each night, I tend to be wired, and I could probably do a fifth one because it's you're on a high by then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I talked to you the other day, and it was something like 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, like, and you were just finishing up, and I was like, what are you doing up? I mean, I've got jet lag. What are you doing up this early in the morning?
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember that. It's kind of crazy. I wasn't expecting anyone else to being awake at that strange and crazy hour.
So yeah, I know, but it was fun. I think, you see, what's tended to happen is, after I finish the fourth one each night, I go and find out what the hell's been going on YouTube while I've been doing the hangouts. And there's always been some fucking drama going on, which I then catch up on. So that keeps me up for another, you know, 3 or 4 hours.
Well, it's been a really drama-rich week, that's for sure. I mean, I can imagine you've got so much to sort of dig into. I mean, I generally try to avoid it, but I mean, it's just been one of the biggest cluster fucks of a week I've ever seen. So
yeah,
it's almost like watching a car wreck in slow motion, or sort of the morbid curiosity you get when you drive past a car wreck and people slow down to take a look, and they don't want to be taking a look, but it's just morbid curiosity gets the better of them. And that would be probably this week.
Yeah. I mean, there's a sort of mix of genuine human concern for the people involved, and also some contempt for some of the people involved, mixed with just sheer, spectator sport sadism, because it just goes on and on. It gets worse and worse. I mean, for anyone who... Should we name names? I don't know.
I think we could just go on as we are. I don't think we even.
we're talking about this drama with the skeptic community centering around Kraut and Tea and various other people on this Discord server. I mean, God Almighty.
I think you should probably use the correct name. I think it was the Task Force is what it was titled. The Task Force is how they titled it. So I'm laughing so hard I'm starting to snort.
I mean, I remember when this whole thing started with Rage After Storm and the Andy Barsky stream.
I remember that as well.
Was that July?
That was in the summertime.
Yeah, it was.
June, July, I remember, something like that.
Yeah, because I remember I made my video about it, and I was sweating because it was so fucking hot. I think it was the height of summer. And that was annoying, because then that various people said, oh, look at him sweating. And that is kind of like a weak point. But of course, that was all, that was desperate, because the fact is that I'm confident that what I said in that video was true and that it hit home and they really didn't like it. Bunch of hyenas or children sadistically zeroing in on this girl, Rage After Storm. And I've got, of course, the big fucking joke is that they call themselves objective and skeptical and logical and rational, and yet there they were being completely irrational and unobjective and unscientific.
Well, I think that's how they've garnered for themselves the reputation of the skeptic TM community. I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm not one to generally wade myself into any of this sort of YouTube drama, but I mean, this has just been ridiculous going on for 6 months. And I would agree with you. There is no skepticism. There is no inquiry. And there's honestly very little intellectual curiosity, because they've already come to their conclusions before they've even heard the arguments. And that doesn't really sound like skepticism to me. It sounds like ideologues. And in that sense, the ideology that they're trying to push is no different from any other cult. You know, they've already got all of the answers. And if you, I mean, Rage After Storm is a very good example. If you are a heretic to their ideologies, you will be dealt with. And they dealt with her severely. I mean, the way this girl was treated. And the one thing, too, is that particular stream, I wasn't familiar with almost any of them prior to that stream. And a lot of them seem like good people. You know, most of them, everybody wants to see themselves as a good person. You know, I don't think anyone's evil. But the actions of that stream were reprehensible. And I think watching that just pretty much sealed the deal for me of what the skeptic community is and what the skeptic community believes in and what the skeptic community will do to those that disagree with their dyed-in-the-wool ideology. And, you know, that having been said, the way that it's unfolded since is almost a comedy of errors and a tragedy to boot. So
I think that the two things are the two things that I would say about the skeptic community is that they are it's a social scene, and it's very primarily a social scene.
It would seem I
would suspect that the people involved in it were not very popular at school. They were sort of probably a bit oddballs, and but now they've got this thing, and it means a huge, and that's why I think it means so much to them. And so they're desperate for social acceptance, basically. So
and probably social approval and making sure that they're the ones giving the social approval. You know, for example, I'm just reading a comment from Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, and she's saying something along the lines that Kraut called her a white cunt hair bitch or something. I mean, this is not the way you talk to people. You know, this is just not the way you deal with other people. I mean, this is just, it's, again, I don't want to use the word overly, but it's reprehensible to talk to people that way in such ways.
Oh, I mean, he said similar things about Rage After Storm. He called her
Nazi queen bitch.
Little Nazi bitch queen. And then he said to, who was it, Aiden, he said, shut up. In this horrible,
I saw that in the Warski, the recent Warski stream. Are you talking?
Yeah,
it was actually the first. It was the first words uttered. Yeah, and I wouldn't have commented on this drama at all, other than the fact that my name was and information were being collected on me on that Discord server, the task force, in quotations, TM. You know, copyright task force. And, you know, my name is in there, and I have not ever spoken to any of the skeptics. I've never spoken of the skeptics. I've never interacted with the skeptics, yet there I am. And the funny part is what I understand, talking to some other YouTube personalities that I won't name, that Discord server was when it was being told that independent third-party people could look through it, that it was deleted, everything in it. I mean, this is not, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire, and this stinks, you know, to high heaven.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
They misspelled, just for the sake of a cheap shot, they misspelled your name, Pigeon.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, with a D. And, I mean, Jesus Christ. And they misspelled yours.
I mean,
Oh, it's too good. Yeah. So, yeah, as I said, a comedy of errors, you know, run by a bunch of Keystone cops or, you know, trying to play detective, it would seem.
It's very strange. I mean, but to get back to what I was saying, I think they're obsessed with social acceptance. And this is why, especially Kraut. And, you know, he's now this cult leader. He's got these lackeys, these sycophants. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's like some sort of medieval kingdom, a fiefdom. And God, I don't know what else to say about it. It's just fucking ridiculous. You've got to remember that this is all about, you know, internet drama.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's you know, it does matter because this is, it's a battle. It's a battle of ideas. And, you know, I think it does have ramifications, repercussions further down the line.
I think what it comes down to the skeptic community refusing to accept biological essentialism. Their current paradigm of hyper-individualism is based on this crazy, insane mental gymnastics that they have to perform in order to explain the different outcomes of people with all sorts of environmental post-hoc rationalizations, and they're trying to avoid any sort of biological essentialism. And in all terms, it's wishful thinking, and practically science is that the skeptic community are refusing. I mean, what is this? You know, like if I'm going to impregnate a woman, I'm pretty sure that a human baby is going to come out. I don't think that she's going to lay eggs and an alligator will fall out. You know, this hyper-individualism that they're trying to espouse, it only works for those in the top of the hierarchy when you're in a multicultural, diverse country. And for the rest of people, it's bullshit. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Civilization is, it's a team sport. And this whole skeptic idea of, I'm not going to have any convictions. I'm not going to have any opinions. I am a hyper individual. I am this person that is above the fray. I mean, yeah, fine, but that doesn't generally work in a society, especially one that's, you know, circling the drain the way ours is. And it's, in my estimation, it's a cop-out, and it's a way to basically keep your ass floating in the wind until you feel that you're going to have to make a commitment to one side or the other. It's a coward's way out, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and this is why with each of these videos that I made replying to Kraut's videos, I emphasize at the end, in the time that Kraut has been making his videos against the alt-right, X number of refugees have arrived in Europe. I think it started with 30,000, and then by the last one, it was 75,000.
Yeah.
And I calculated that as accurately as I could. Because this is the thing, you know, while he pontificates and fence sits and, you know, just jerks off at how cleverly egalitarian he is, this is going on. This is going on. His civilization, which enables him to be so comfortable and decadent, is being destroyed.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. You can argue points of economics. I told you I was sorry before we got onto this stream. I'm having a little bit of trouble speaking properly. I've got a bit of a tongue tied here. I think I told you before. The thing is that the only way these sorts of opinions are able to exist is because they're existing on the fumes of a society that's burnt out. We're burning fumes at this point. And unless people start understanding that we are literally in a life and death struggle, literally, then all of this basically mental flatulence is going to be all for naught. And until people realize that, then, you know, there's very little you can say. And it's hard to take them even seriously, to be honest, at some points.
Yes, indeed. It becomes exasperating because you're trying to get through to them about how they're wrong. They're pissing around. And they happen to be doing it regarding an issue that is of critical importance to the way we live. And, yeah, you know, it's just fucking annoying. But anyway, I don't know what Kraut is going to do now. It will be interesting to see how he moves on from this.
I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, the only thing I think that he should do, and if he does listen to this, it's not that I dislike the guy. I do dislike the fact that I was being in part of the quote-unquote task force that was trying to take down the alt-right, which, as you know, I don't identify as. As I've said many times, I'm an ally too, but I don't identify as alt-right. There's certain things that I just don't. And we've talked about this before, but
yeah.
If he is listening to this, my only suggestion would be, I don't dislike you. I don't think you're a bad person. I think you're a very misguided person. And the thing is you're not going to win anything from this. This is not a hill worth dying on and destroying all of your, all of your reputation that you've built up over the years that you've had your thing. And the one question you have to ask yourself is, what are you gaining from this? What are you gaining? And if you're not, I mean, this is a very simple question. What are you gaining?
Well, I think it started for him. It started as a sort of puritanical. I think he wanted to punish us for being racial higher, whatever the opposite of egalitarians is. I think it was also an ego thing, because he felt that Rage After Storm had made a fool of him. And instead of realizing that it was his own actions that had made a fool of him, he sort of blamed it on her and also the alt-right. So that was what he thought he would gain from this. He thought he would gain revenge from it. And so he put a lot of effort into making these four videos against the alt-right on race realism, which backfired one after another. And now this has happened. And one thing I would say about this server business, they've also got a channel on me as well. And from what I can tell, the contents of that channel on me does not relate in any way to anything that I've said about race realism. Mm-hmm. So it's specifically stuff posted by Spinosaurus Ken, a truly delightful YouTuber who I didn't even know.
I'm not familiar with him. I've only heard of him and that he's some kind of piece of shit.
Oh, he's awful.
Is all I've heard. I'm not familiar with him now.
Yeah. Imagine if you could crossbreed a skeptic with a MGTOW. And
it's an abortion waiting to happen.
You know, it's an abortion that should have happened.
But yeah.
No, I shouldn't say that. But he's just a very unpleasant individual, and even more puritanical than Kraut, to be honest.
Okay,
he's very, very black and white. I mean, Kraut. You know, people say that Kraut's not intelligent. I think he is. I think that's unfair.
I think he is as well.
And they also make fun of his English, which I don't think is fair either. His English is a lot better than a lot of English speakers will speak German. You know, he's got a fine grasp of English. But to get back to Spinosaurus, who's now called Alternative Facts, he's just a nasty, vengeful little shit. Mm-hmm. And he made a video saying that this is like, when was it? It was just, it was during last year's millennial. So it was like a year ago right now. He made a video saying that I advocate violence. And he was twisting things that I've said, because I've said that violence is inevitable, that civil war is coming, and that ethnostates, if they will be achieved at all, will only be achieved as a result of those civil wars. And I went into, I made a video, Peaceful Ethno-Nationalism, explaining why there would, ethno-nationalism would not come about through peaceful means. Now, that was not to say be violent. I was saying it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, this is the reality of it. But he twisted this to say that I was advocating violence. Now, on the server, the channel on me consists solely of a couple of posts by him talking about that.
Right.
And saying that I'm being evasive on, this. So he's obviously still determined to go for this. That Millennial Woes is an advocate of racial violence. Now, first of all, he's beating a dead horse. But the more important thing, the more interesting thing, is that this has nothing to do with race realism. So it doesn't, if the server is about beating the alt-right on race realism, then Why is that there? And also, another thing is, if the server is for beating the alt-right on race realism or on any particular issue, then why do they have channels on particular people instead of on particular issues?
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely.
You know, that in itself is...
There's smoke, there's fire. And it stinks to high heaven, this entire debacle that is the task force. The task force, I like saying that. It rolls off the tongue. no, absolutely. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And the thing is if you want to even look at this, are they going to now turn on Charles Murray? Are they going to turn on Sam Harris? Both of them acknowledge and that there are differences between groups of people. And that doesn't mean you can't take people individually and give respect to people individually. But the thing is, for example, if you want to take a look at the outcomes of countries, it's a very good thing to do for anyone can do. And you can find this information in a multitude of places is you take a look at a map that is colored for average IQ of a country. So you have, let's say, Japan, that's about 104 to 105, I believe, maybe 106. Eastern China, probably the same. Europe, I think, goes between 99 to 100, pretty much. I think North America is the same. Australia is the same. And then you go down to, for example, I think it's Australian Aborigines, and I think it might be Botswana, where you find people in the high 50s.
And oh my then you, God.
Yeah, then you correlate. You correlate those. What you do is you take that map and you overlay that map with another map that's color coded toward Human Development Index and GDP per capita or per capita GDP, excuse me. And you'll find that they're almost identical. There's no magical formula in the ground of a country. You want to take a look at a country, take a look at Japan. That country gets rattled the shit out of almost every year, not almost every year without exception by major problems, major disasters, whether it be typhoons, volcanoes, hurricanes, tsunamis, earthquakes, what have you. It has no natural resources of any kind, none. Like they've got nothing. And they have to import 70% of their food. They have to import all of their resources in order to then build stuff to export. But the country is one of the wealthiest in the world. Now, juxtapose that to a country that's, say, filled with natural resources but living hand-to-mouth existences. It's not the land. It's not the resources that somehow some sort of elixir or ether in the land that creates the country. It's the people that create the country. So if you wanted to take, Absolutely. Let's say... the thing is that this is not some, what I'm trying to say to you is that this is not some out there idea. I mean, even mainstream leftists like Sam Harris acknowledge that this is the reality of the situation. Academics like Charles Murray, he does too. But they also, both of them, especially Sam Harris, reject politics because it goes against their ethical nature, their ethical compass, and that's fine. You know, that's for a person to choose. But the idea that none of this can be quantified, none of this can be observed because you can't find the fucking gene that tells you what does this. I mean, like I said, I'm pretty sure that if I get a woman pregnant, she's not going to birth an alligator.
Yeah, it's just sheer autism. And I know that some people don't like the use of that word. It's annoying because it's a very useful word to use in this context. But it's, let's put it, chronic pedantry. That might be sufficient to describe it. It's just like missing the point as many times as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's not intellectually honest. You know, that's dishonest to miss the point as many.
It's pretty much the breadth and scope of the entire skeptic TM community. I mean, it just I to be honest can't watch their stuff because I find it all if they are actually looking for the truth, if they are skeptical, if they are intellectually curious, then they would come to certain understandings of things that pretty much anyone with two eyes, two ears, and even like an Aboriginal IQ could figure out. And that is that comes around. And the thing is if you can't, then you're being intellectually dishonest for your ideology. And at least say that, somebody like Sam Harris. He'll yeah. say it. I mean, he acknowledges it, but he won't accept it. And he's doing it for his ideology. Just, you know, be intellectually honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't pretend that the reality is something which it is not. But I, you know, what I always wonder is how can they justify the claim that they're making is that the races are all equal intellectually. And I would ask them, that is surely the more preposterous notion. So when are they going to provide any evidence for that? When are they going to provide a scientific explanation for it, an evolutionary explanation for it, and real world, you know, current year evidence for it? Because there isn't any.
No.
You know, there is no reason to believe that the races are intellectually equal, except that you want them to be. Mm-hmm. It's just fucking sheer wishful thing. I mean, it's like saying, well, Santa Claus is real because you haven't proved scientifically that he's not real, so I'll just keep believing. And how dare you try to ruin this idea for me?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I leave out fucking cookies and fucking milk every 24th of December. How dare you?
Well, I think some people are impatient for us to move beyond the.
Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, I could talk about
forever. But, okay, let's move on.
But yeah. Okay, so let's talk about your recent travels in Bonnie, Scotland, my own country, yeah. and then England. So yeah, go for it. What do you think of Edinburgh?
Oh,
people usually say it's very beautiful.
I loved it. It is. It's spectacular. Just the way it's built on that ravine between the castle and the city on the sort of the city center. It's what I really liked about it is the compact walkability of it. I thought it was just an amazingly beautiful city. I mean, the architecture looks mostly Edwardian and Georgian, and it has a very different vibe architecturally than the cities in England. It's mostly built in stone. I really check out architecture when I go there. The thing was, is I was quite surprised by when I was there. I mean, it was only about 3 degrees maybe. And then at the worst, it was at nighttime, I don't know, maybe -2 or -3, but I was quite shocked, not shocked. I was surprised by all of the moaning and whinging I was hearing from the Scots about how cold it is outside. You know, it's like, man, this is not that bad. You know, like you guys, you know, this is not, you know, that bad. I mean, I was actually quite comfortable. I thought it was, I was expecting it to be really a lot worse coming from Tokyo. And some days it was almost exactly what it would have been in Tokyo. Then again, and people in Tokyo do the same thing. They're like, Samui, oh, it's so Samui, which means cold. And it was kind of, I guess it's just some people are people wherever you go, right? They just like to complain. But, you know, the Scots generally tend to moan. But, man, it was lovely. I mean, they were just, I had a great time. Everybody I met was just wonderful. The food, you know, it's like English food. I mean, you know, it's good. You can eat it for about a week until you kind of need something different. But
we're not good at food, I have to admit.
Yeah, the British Isles are just, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's probably one of the worst places other than maybe Scandinavia and Germany. It's like a Northern Europe problem, I think. And, but yeah, it was, I had a great time. I think I was told you when I talked to you at like 5 or 4 a.m., I was staying in the Haymarket area, which was just a easy walk to Princess Street and pretty much the whole town. And the one thing I did while I was there, and I'm actually going to be releasing a video on it, I think probably toward the, I don't know, maybe 24th or 25th. I'm not sure because the video that I'm going to be making is about Christmas insofar as Christmas is now being celebrated in Western countries, specifically Western European countries, and the need to basically create, I don't know what they're called in my video, I call them diversity barriers.
That's my favorite phrase. I think that's a hilarious phrase for it because it's almost like when it comes to it, you actually have to have a barrier between you and the diversity, which we're meant to celebrate anyway. So I think it's a very funny phrase.
Absolutely. In my video, I actually even say it's a concrete, you know, pun intended, it's a concrete visual reminder of the absolute need in society for people to have shared values and have something in common, because obviously there is nothing. Yeah, somebody camouflex in the chat is saying Allah Akbarers. I actually do use that in the video. And you know, yeah, it's a good one, isn't
brilliant.
It? Yeah, it's like Allah, yeah, Yeah, yeah. So, I went up. The funny part was, is I went up to the one on George's Street, which is just up from Princess Street there in Edinburgh. Security guards about the different styles of Allah Ak barriers or diversity barriers or Merkel Lego, and they were very aware because I had seen videos on YouTube where they had done simulations. German, I'm not exactly sure who. It might have been a German security company. It might have been a German truck. It might have been Mercedes. I'm not sure. But what they did do is they ran one of those big, large trucks of peace into those sort of barriers, and those trucks just kept on going. And so what they were doing in Edinburgh, which was quite interesting, is what they had is they were creating more or less traps for these things. So what they had is the diversity barrier, the piece of Lego, and then they had a bunch of large, really thick chains attached to two of them. So if a truck of peace tried to run the barrier kind of as a drag and as a weight, and would probably swing in and knock out, you know, the tires toward the back and just probably stop it a lot better than the ones I've seen in Germany. So like airport security, it's security for fashionable reasons, and security for it's a false sense of security. And at least the ones in Edinburgh, just from looking at them, were probably a lot better than the ones I'd seen in other places.
But how ridiculous it is that European countries are now competing to have the best diversity barriers.
Oh, well, this is the thing. You should also note that in Edinburgh, like they were in Germany, I think they dressed them up as big Christmas presents, even with bows. And, you know, I was noting in my video, which you guys will be able to see, I don't want to tell you all of it, but, you know, there was one guy who was jokingly with me talking about shout out to Woz and Black Pigeon, fucking legends in our presence. Merry Christmas. Thanks, Baked. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
This guy I was talking to in Edinburgh, he was a funny character. I mean, I noticed that there was a lot of quite interesting people there, but he was joking that, you know, it's actually, it's bigoted not to enjoy these things because, you know, if you do get run down by a truck of peace, you've already got, in the way they've wrapped up these diversity barriers, you've got the fabric for your wounds, you know, and you've got the ribbon to act as a tourniquet. So what more do you need? I mean, this is what every non-bigoted person, every non-bigoted person has to say. I mean, how could you be against these things when you've already got the medical necessities in order to take care of your injuries that were given to you in the name of peace?
Well, they should also have a Quran tucked away inside there somewhere so that you can, you know, pray for forgiveness.
I mean, God damn, the UK is a fucking police state. I was looking at when I was at the airport and I went past one of these. It should be an advertisement. You know, they have them on bus shelters and they have them on, you know, different things. And it was one of these full-length things, and it was talking about, hey, if you bought cigarettes and are taking them into the UK for selling, we're going to find you and we're going to throw you in jail. And it's just, I mean, why do you, you know, what? Why is this something that the government even addresses and tries to get involved with in the UK? It's, and I saw all kinds of really Orwellian stuff, especially when I was in England as well. And, you know, your country is in need of some sort of social revolution more than, well, not more than my country. I don't think my country could be saved at this point, but, you know.
Well, that's an interesting point. What do you mean by Orwellian stuff in England?
Well, it's just, so for example, I saw stuff about TV licensing. I saw stuff about knives. I saw stuff about people being arrested. When I was looking at the newspaper, people being arrested for their Facebook and Twitter posts. I was, just all kinds of things that, in a free society, wouldn't exist. But the point is that what I realized, and I also realized as well, kind of the predilection of the Scots to be so smug in their leftism, is the fact that they haven't been so enriched yet, as far as I could tell, at least in Edinburgh compared to England. And
I have to say
the proximity of enrichment. So sorry, go ahead.
You know, I mean, from my point of view, Edinburgh is far more diverse than it was 15 years ago. And I worked when I was 17. So actually longer, so it's like 17 years ago now. I worked in Edinburgh like doing dishes at various restaurants. And that was my first sort of job away from home. And, you know, so I was meeting a lot of people and all that. And, you know, everyone was white, basically. I remember one guy at one place. It was black. It's really all I can recall in the way of diversity back then, which seems remarkable now because, you know, when I went to see, I was dragged out of my house 2 years ago when Interstellar came out. A friend forced me to go and see it. And then after that, we sort of walked around Edinburgh. And I think this was at the start of 2015. And I hadn't, it had been a long time since I had just walked around Edinburgh, and I thought, fucking hell, it's just transformed. I mean, there were so many non-whites. And
for me, it didn't seem that bad, to tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I think
it's just all proximity and what you're used to, probably. You know, I am not a person, like I said, I don't mind being around. I mean, I live in a country that it's 99.99% East Asian, and I don't mind it. I don't mind being around people. It's just that I don't like being around generally, how should I say this, people that have a predilection toward violence, crime, and other socially. I don't know how I'm going to... Anyway, I just don't want to be around it. And there are certain groups that generally have a propensity toward antisocial behavior. And there, for example, in London, there's a whole dump truck full of them. You know, the whole city is at this point.
Well, I was actually pleasantly surprised by London. When I went there in June, or May this year, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought. And I think the reason that is... the case is that there's so much money there now that the poor types, you know, the people who aren't economically productive or whatever, get pushed out to the suburbs. So, well, not the suburbs, the outskirts. So the city centre of London is actually really quite nice. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did notice was it was a very beautiful city. Again, it had been a long time, 10 years since I'd been there, and I had a nice time. I made a set of videos, but I've been so fucking busy ever since that I haven't got around to editing them and putting them up. It's ridiculous, and I am very sorry for that. But I made about 10 videos just of various things, and I'll get them up as soon as I can in the new year. And it was just a nice experience. I was kind of dreading it because I didn't know what it was going to be like. I thought, I kept hearing horror stories, you know. And also the acid attacks stuff was starting then as well. This is like May, April, May. And, I mean, that is terrifying. That is a fucking terrifying new development, the acid attacks.
The acid attack thing
seems
is...
To be,
yeah, absolutely. No, I was just going to say, I mean, that is just something that you would never have expected a country like the UK to have to address as a social concern. And now that it is, I mean, a lot of the social concerns that the UK are having to address right now are things that the most virulent right-wing populist in the 1980s and 90s would never even suggest would come to fruition. It is something that that not even people in their worst nightmare would imagine could be daily headlines. Rotherham, you know, Rochdale, acid attacks, just the absolute implosion of
Sharia law.
Yeah, well, it's the application of Sharia law. And the thing is you've got to again, and I've said before, I mean, even when we were talking about Australia, you have to be able to take people as individuals. One of my friends that I have in Tokyo, he's actually talked to Tara, I think, a couple of times. He goes by the moniker, the Renegade of Funk. He's a black American guy, but he's one of the smarter guys I know. She had me over for Thanksgiving. So, you know, the thing is you've got to take people for what they are. But the thing is something like Islam is not a person. It's an ideology that has no place in an enlightened Western democracy. It absolutely is a it's not even a Bronze Age. This is the problem. It should be a Bronze Age because, you know, but it's actually, you know, it's 1400 years old. I mean, you know, it was already, you know, the Middle Ages, not the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. Well, I mean, a lot of people would suggest that Islam is the precursor for the Dark Ages in Europe as they cut, you know, Europe off from the Mediterranean world and gobbled up and cannibalized the ancient world. But where people should be met with, you know, the decorum and the respect of individual, you know, taking people as individuals, there is absolutely no reason that people have to respect an ideology whose stated goal is not only your enslavement, but the destruction of you as a person and your beliefs, your society, the things that make your life important. And this is the difference that a lot of people don't seem to be able to make. And I'm not going to make excuses for my general dislike of the tenets of Islam and what it's about. That doesn't mean I dislike all Muslim people. Now, this is where you have these word games that are played by people. They'll try and, well, he doesn't like Islam. He's an Islamophobe. Well, yes, I'm an Islamophobe. Islamophobia, if you actually look at that word, the word Islamophobia is Islamphobia. Phobia is an irrational fear. It's not an irrational fear when they're really trying to kill you. You know, this is what I'm saying. And this is also, it's not an irrational fear when you see the changes, the wholesale changes that come to a society when Islam enters the arena, especially the political arena, whether that political arena is, you know, in terms of voting or balloting or in terms of, you know, at the end of the barrel of a gun. I mean, war is just politics taken to a different level.
Yeah, and what I would say about this is people disgustingly look for reasons to, besmirch Islamophobes, and calling them Islamophobes is one such method, and also for ways that people look for ways to kid themselves, or let's say convince themselves, that it's all going to turn out okay. But really, what they should be doing is looking for reasons. They should be looking at the evidence and thinking, well, actually, what are the odds here? You know, when has Islam integrated peacefully and successfully and productively with another society?
Never.
So what are the odds? Yeah.
Never. No, so, Samuel Huntington called, he called it right back in the 90s before any of this began. He said the next kinds of fighting were going to be clashes of civilization. That was the name of his book. And he was express in his explanation and his description of Islam having what he called bloody borders. Wherever you have Islam and you have the other, there is always tension and generally bloodshed. And that also goes within Dar al-Islam. You'll have the problem between, for example, the Sunni and the Shiite, between Iran and Saudi Arabia. So it's absolutely not something that one can just slough off.
It's not a religion of peace. And this is the big farce about that phrase. We have that phrase, and I've said this before on the channel, we have the phrase Islam is a religion of peace precisely because everyone knows that it is not a religion of peace. The very fact that needs to be said, that Islam is a religion of peace, gives you a signal that, you know, we all know that it's a lie.
The only society that has to tell themselves that this is the Western society. If you spend any time in the Orient, they are point blank in what they think is, or what they think of A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z. They'll tell you straight up exactly what they think about things, where we dance around like we've got, you know, we've got, I don't know, spiders in our underwear. And it's only Western people and Western societies that have a problem giving their real opinion on what they see and what they think. I don't know of any other society that has this handicap, to be honest. And I don't know another word for it.
Yeah, and I wonder why we have it. I mean, I don't know if it's intrinsic pathological altruism or if it's something in the, you know, in the air now. I don't know. It doesn't really matter, I suppose, because it can be counteracted. We know that white people have not always been like this. No. And it is something that it's off this age, specifically. It hasn't, you know what I mean? It can be counteracted. Yeah. So but it is insane. And it leads us to, as I say, no one goes around saying Hinduism is a religion of peace or
Buddhism is a religion. Buddhism is a religion of peace. You don't need to say it.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that you need to say Islam is a religion of peace means really that it isn't. And you know it isn't. And the person you're talking to knows that it isn't. So the very phrase kind of says to you, kind of indicates this is all one big mass delusion.
Mm. Well, what I could suggest to you is talk to some Hindus or Sikhs in the UK, and they'll be straight up in their opinions and their honesty toward Islam and how to deal with it. But anyway,
I think the final thing I would say about this is everyone, any 3 or 4 year old could tell you what is likely to happen when you put different. There's going to be disagreement and conflict, and that is just the most basic common sense. And so, even on the face of it, multiculturalism is a bad idea. That's disregarding the content of each individual culture involved. Just the very act of forcing diversity is obviously crazy. Yes, you can learn to live with it. You can condition each new generation to not have preconceptions and not favour their own and all that. But it's a very arduous process. And then in our case, we have the added element that one of these cultures is Islam, which is going to play along forever. It's not even playing along now. I mean, they're only, I think they're about 6% of the British population, if I recall correctly. And they make very little effort to even pretend that they're going to remain at 6%, and that if they rose above that, that they would be nice to us. I mean, it's very clear what's on the cards. And I think everyone knows it. And this is why, in the meantime, we've got this nonsense, this delusion going on among liberals and the establishment. But I think that they know it's a lie, and they know that the public in general know that it's a lie. And I don't expect it to last forever. Again, I think this is one more thing that I think will be looked back upon in 100 years from now as just evidence of sheer insanity.
Well, I think degeneracy and cultural suicide come when a society has exhausted itself. I mean, I've read a lot of things about the fall of the Roman Empire and examples that you could just take out of the headlines that you see today. I mean, I don't want to use all the catchwords and talking points, but, wrapping up this part of our conversation, I would agree with you. And I think blasé will not withstand evolutionary forces and pressures when push comes to shove.
Yeah, it gets real. And the sort of nicey-nicey attitude that we're affecting just now, it's just not going to be adequate. It's going to be completely, it's going to hamper us. It's going to be very counterproductive to dealing with this shit once the shit hits the fan. I mean, I always think of Justin Trudeau because he's the perfect embodiment of this whole attitude. I know that you have a special hatred for him.
Oh, God. I mean, if there's one person on this planet, I mean, the guy, I don't want to get into it because the whole conversation will just get derailed on my particular dislike for the man and the destruction that he's meting out to the Canadian people. It's not only shameful, but it's just a disgrace.
Yeah. Do you think he'll get voted back in?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think there's too many people that voted for him. I mean, it was basically Canada has a really, I'll just briefly go through this. Canada has a very predictable political wind. I mean, not as we move forward into the future, as Canada's population in demographics change, but Canada generally has a right-wing government for 10, sometimes 15 years, and then a left-wing government for 10, 15 years. You got prime ministers. I think that probably, there's only been probably four or five in my life. And what happens is, you know, the last prime minister, Stephen Harper, is, you know, he's been in there for a long time. We got to have some change, you know. And the drama teacher offered all of the young people, I'm absolutely gonna make you guys happy with free and legal weed. Well, he probably didn't say it like that. He probably said, you know, I'm just gonna make it all great for you guys because I'm just gonna have legal weed. You get stoned whenever you want. And oh my God, vote for me. And then for the women, he'd be like, oh, babies, look at my hair, my dreamy eyes. And people just fucking voted for this clown because he had his father was the prime minister. He had a bankable name, but the guy's he's probably got an IQ of maybe 85.
He does seem very much like a sort of white Obama.
Yeah, he's a white Obama, but Obama at least I think had a little bit between the noggin, between the ears. He wasn't like Trudeau. Trudeau literally, when he speaks, he was crying the other day, literally crying, using his...
That was just pathetic.
Using his honed drama technique when he was giving... So, for example, during the Cold War, there were legitimate concerns that people that were... you know, into sexual practices that were, let's say, unconventional, or people that were gay, because at the time social acceptance of homosexuality was, well, there was no acceptance. And they feared that people that were in sensitive jobs in places like NORAD, which is the North, it's the joint Canadian-American military group that was for the protection of the continent and for other very sensitive jobs. The Canadian government either kept tabs on homosexuals and I don't want to say sexual deviants, because basically in Canada, the Supreme Court allowed and ruled in favor of having sex with animals. So, I mean, that's a right as a Canadian now. I mean, you can have sex with animals, but you're not allowed to criticize Islam. What a fucking great country. Anyway, the point is he was giving an apology, and they were spending $145 million. That's million, not thousand, $145 million on education about LGBTQ2, I don't know the rest of the acronym, as well as building statues across the country for LGBT.
It's just insane.
He was crying, giving this apology of things that had happened before he was even born. So, I mean,
I
can't help it. It was just this, we're sorry as Canadians. We don't know what to do. I can't help it. I mean, it was just awful, my friend. It was awful.
Does anyone actually believe that that's genuine?
I don't think anyone.
I don't even know.
And I think not even the Aborigines would believe it.
All right.
Anyway, let's move on from this topic, because I'm sorry, man.
So depressing. I mean, people were asking me in the Q&A that I just did, would I like to visit Canada? And, you know, yeah, kind of. I mean, I am curious about it, because it seems an interesting halfway house between, like, culturally, between America and Britain. And yeah, it seems like more of the British culture was held onto, and there was a closer tie. You know, Canadians have all heard of, you know, certain British sitcoms. They seem to be more familiar with, they're more attached to it. And so it's kind of an interesting thing, you know.
Much more so in the, I would imagine, like the 90s and the early 2000s, definitely. I mean, I grew up watching all of the British television. Pea sauce. I mean, the whole country was a lot more British when I was growing up. I mean, the province I grew up in is called British Columbia, and it has the Union Jack on its flag, on its provincial flag. And, you know, the city of Vancouver is named after George Vancouver, who was a British explorer. I mean, the suburbs of that city are places like Langley and Surrey. You know, it's definitely, I mean, there's still pictures of the Queen in the post offices, and you know, the Union Jack still flies, because I mean, a lot of Canadians fought and died under the Union Jack in the Second World War. But you know, as mass immigration ramped up in the late 90s, it's definitely losing that fast.
Well, I mean, it's the same in Britain as well, I'm afraid. It's happening everywhere. But I do wonder, I think I said this in the Q&A, that I think that European countries have more of a chance because their identity is older. And their, well, or rather, not even identity, their history goes on much longer, much further back than that of Canadians in Canada and Americans in America. So maybe the, you know, Europe stands a better chance. But it seems a shame to write off Canada like that, you know?
Well, I don't want to, but the problem is that it's a country that's been so brainwashed and its people have been so flagellated with their own moral responsibility for things that had happened 200 years ago. You know, I don't want to bring it up, but I watched a South Park episode the other day, and it was, I don't know if anyone watches that, but the whole shtick of the episode was this Randy Marsh character, who's the father of one of the kids. He wanted to basically become a victim class because, you know, they had this DNA 23andMe thing. And he just, what he did is he started, you know, French kissing a Native American, hoping to get some Native American DNA when he had his test because so he could become a victim. So like in the show, they're like, I'm 2.1% black. And now I can say nigga anytime I want. So they're like, he's like, hey, George, he says, the guy walks in the office. He's like, hey, George, hey, my nigga. And you know, the next one is like, I'm 0.4% Cherokee. I'm a victim. And then the other person's like, I've got 1% of, you know, whatever, I don't know, Botswana. I'm a victim. And it was pretty much what Canada's built on. Everyone's, you know, everyone either wants to be a victim or feels
that's a thing. Yeah, that's the thing. I remember reading a Theodore Dalrymple essay many years ago about the sort of victim culture that we have now, where there is kudos attached to just the act of being a victim. You don't need to even overcome your... In fact, it's better if you don't overcome your victimhood because, you know, it's more bankable then. And also, the fact that you can't overcome it means that it must be all the greater. So your suffering must be all the greater. This is a very serious thing. It came up the other day. What was it? There was something about people competing in victimhood, and it brought this whole thing to mind. It was just yesterday, and I can't remember what it was. It's a problem because I don't think it suits. I don't think it. I think it degrades anyone to sort of languish in victimhood, and any, especially groups. I think it demoralizes and gets them into the psychology of being passive and parasitical.
Yeah,
but I think it's especially bad for whites because it just doesn't suit us. We're we have this spirit of, you know, conquering, pioneering, building, self-sufficiency, and so when we give into victimhood, it really assaults our identity in a way that I don't think it does for other groups so much.
Right.
And so it's something that I don't think, you know, like some people in the alt-right think that we should form white student unions and then fight for white rights. Now, on the one hand, I think, yeah, we do need to. But on the other hand, I don't think it becomes us to act as victims, even if we are victims.
That's absolutely, yeah. I would agree with you, because the moral imperative nowadays is to become a victim. So it's basically an escalation. Well, I'm a victim because of X, Y, and Z. Well, hold on. I'm a victim because of A, B, and C. And it's just a one-upmanship on who's the more victim or who's the biggest victim class. And I would agree with you. I think stooping to that level, and I think trying to prescribe victimhood onto yourself because you feel that this is the paradigm to work within. This is the paradigm that they're setting. You don't play by their fucking rules and you don't play by their game. You know, you don't subscribe to this kind of fucking stupid mentality because that's what it is. And yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on that.
I mean, it comes from Marxism. That there is something inherently dignified about being the underdog and being victimized.
Absolutely.
And whereas any exercise of power, any ownership of power is illegitimate and therefore you want to be as powerless as possible so as to be as legitimate as possible. That is just crazy way of thinking to get into.
Well, this, yeah, and it's not a way to think that can sustain any kind of economic problems. I mean, I spent, before I came here, I spent a day in Thailand just because the flights coming over to Europe weren't, they just didn't match up. So I arrived in Bangkok at like 6 o'clock and I left at a.m. and I left at like midnight the same day. Market when I was there. And, you know, there were these kids, they were still in their school uniforms, but they were outside the market begging for money for their tuition, I assume, you know, and you look at these kids, they go to school and then they go to the markets to beg afterwards. When you live in a society that has these kinds of life or death, you know, hand to mouth existences, these problems don't exist. These are first world problems and we just create them for ourselves. So, you know,
yeah, it's the search for authenticity, or and it can just be sheer expediency. You realize, I can get some money if I pretend to be a victim.
That's another thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one person made a good point that, but if we complain about Muslims, then the left accuses us of playing the victim card, and I think this is very interesting. This is a truly disgusting thing that the left do. When we are actually being victimized in the form of anti-white racism or the actual dispossession, you know, of us, of our homelands, that counts as victimization, you know, losing your homeland and also you as a people, as a culture, being systematically besmirched and degraded and dismantled. That is surely victimhood. And yet, as soon as you claim victimhood, they pounce on you for claiming victimhood. I mean, I have to say, looking back to my own story, I was doxxed and, you know, besmirched in the newspapers. And then when I complained about that, when I asked my subscribers for help, then I was accused of playing the victim. And that is
I remember that. The doxxing incident with that fucking cunt. What was his name? McEwen.
Alan McEwen, yeah. I don't want to get too much into it. It's just that what I was saying there reminded me of it, because it's like they victimize you and then criticize you for playing the victim, and that is truly disgusting.
Absolutely, I agree.
So, I think it's a difficult, when we come to the issue of how whites should go about complaining about the presence of Muslims in their societies. It is a difficult thing to know. I mean, whatever you do, you're going to be attacked one way or the other. Mm. If you play the victim, you'll get, or if you say that you are being victimized, then you'll be accused of playing the victim. If you take any other tack, then you'll be accused of being a racist, conquering oppressor. So what can you do?
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with being. The thing is you can't play by their rules and their games. There's nothing wrong with being a conqueror and being a person that goes off. I mean, the thing is the world is created by those that risk. I mean, and they're ones that put themselves out there. So, I mean, you know, if you're a timid person that doesn't want to get their hands dirty, nothing ever changes and nothing will ever come to you, as far as I can tell. So, I mean, a lot of these aspersions and accusations are just that. They are ones that are given off by people that know that they can't do for themselves. And they are things that they have to do in order to give themselves and their ego comfort for their lack of, not accomplishments, but their lack of certainty in themselves, I would say, you know. That having been said, how was 2017 for you this year?
Well, obviously.
How was it? Your opinion.
Well, if you mean not my own personal story, or if you mean my perceptions of how the year was more widely.
Whichever you'd like to talk about.
Well, obviously it started with the doxing, you know, now that it's come up. And so, by the way, some guys claimed that I wasn't doxed because I was a public figure. You know what? Just get the fuck off. Just fuck off. And if you say another thing, I'm going to ban you, you cunt. Because I was doxed, and yes, it was awful. So fuck off.
Who's saying that? Is that someone?
I don't know. Someone non in the chat. Mm-hmm. It's just irritating. Just fuck off. Mm-hmm. Because it was absolutely doxing. They published my name. They showed a photo of my house. Yeah. And made it very easy for people to locate me.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I saw the picture, and they also tried to take the worst possible picture of you with your mouth open and the door half open, and they just tried to take the worst possible picture.
Oh yeah,
and Oh no, I mean, I've been reading the chat. You know, all I get is that I'm a Japanese sex tourist. So let's address that.
Right.
This is the one that they want, because I've seen it 100 times there. The thing is I think a lot of these people don't travel. Japan is not a country for sex tourism at all. Generally speaking, I think the standards of living, if you can get around living space in a city like Tokyo, is generally higher than in most parts of the Western world. And the thing is even if you wanted to go to a prostitute, let's say in Japan, I'm a sex tourist. If I live there, I'd probably, you know, I'd have to be something else. The thing is, the Japanese Yakuza don't generally, I mean, unless you're going to pay like $1,000, they're not going to let a Japanese woman go with a foreigner. They even make sure that their women are not dealt by foreigners. They generally will throw the Filipinos, the Chinese, or any of those out before they would ever throw out their own women. And it's not, some prostitution is not something that I've ever had a predilection or inclination to engage in. So this is like one of these sort of things that I think it comes from 4chan and a lot of the anonymous characters. They like to, in Asia, they got the yellow fever and they're trying to fuck as many prostitutes as they possibly can. You know? No. That's all I have to say on that. That Japan is not, if you want to go for a sex tourist place, I mean, Thailand would be a place, but then again, so would fucking Spain, you know, so would Budapest, so would Prague, so would Bratislava, so would Moscow, so would, you know, I can go on and on and on and on. So, as it is.
Yes. I'm sorry if I lost my temper there. I just thought, this guy's saying that I wasn't doxxed and therefore I am playing the victim, you know?
Oh, no, that's bullshit. I remember when you were doxxed, and I remember the thing is they came right to your dad's house. They took a fucking picture of it. And I think the number plate on the front of your house was even in the fucking photo. And I know the town you live in. I won't say it, but I know the town you live in it. And I've looked at it on Google Earth, and it's the size of a postage stamp. Wouldn't be hard to find. You know, especially for people that are, you know, that like to have a lot of glee in hurting somebody like Antifa, you know, they would take a lot of glee in putting their hands on you. So, I mean, people who say that you weren't doxxed because your face is out there, that doesn't mean, you know, for example, if that's the case, well, why don't you just go over to whoever's house that is a public figure and then say, oh, hi, I'm here. Now I'm just going to sort of hover around your house. It's stupid. I would agree with
you. It's bizarre. It's weird. I mean, I remember when they were at my house, and it's like, you just don't expect that to happen. You know, it's not, I mean, obviously nowadays I would expect it to happen. You know, if it happened tomorrow, I would be ready for it. But because it had never happened before to me, it was very strange indeed. But yeah, the whole thing, I mean, I don't want to, it doesn't feel right to taint this hangout by talking about that episode, which was obviously very specific to me. But yeah, it was pretty strange and stressful experience, let's put it that way. I might talk about it more in the year in review video than I do at the end of this year. I'm not sure. But I would like to say, since we're talking about this, I would like to thank you for making the video about it at the time, because that was a huge reassurance. I really mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, no worries, man. I mean, I'm always in your corner, bro. Always.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people rallied around, and as I said in one of the previous hangouts, it was just so important, you know, that when something like that happens, we have to look out for each other. You know, it's because they, you know, our opposition, Antifa and so on, they are very organized. They look out for each other.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, just the recent, God, what was it? Trad Thought? Recent thing. I mean, it's just, I don't know if these are organized by Antifa or by leftists, but the absolute fucking autism by a lot of people on the so-called right is really, it's frustrating how so quickly they will turn on people that are advocating for them. You know, I found that whole thing.
I think this is us. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's come up in a lot of these millennial hangouts, and I'd like to think that we laid the issue to rest with the Faith Goldie hangout, but I mean, it's obviously there is an issue. There is an issue with, I mean, I would never deny this. There is an issue with women getting involved in any subculture because, of course, they can become a drain. They can start thinking that it's all about them, and then you've got rivalries between men who are competing for them. And yeah, absolutely. But the thing to do is judge whether each individual woman is actually doing that, because there aren't that. It's not like that would be an onerous task. There aren't that many women involved here. Mm-hmm. Whether they're doing that, and they're not doing that. The people who were creating the conflict were not those women themselves. It was other men. And as you say, unfortunately on the right, I think right-wing people in general are just very prone to this kind of thing. And I don't know why it is. It's some people have said it's because it tends to be, you know, fringe types, malcontents and so on, who get involved in this kind of subculture. Other people, well, I posited that it was happening because right-wing people are obsessed with principle at the expense of actually getting things done, you know? Or it could be just that it strikes them as a very legitimate concern and they don't want to let go of it. Mm-hmm. Or it could be their own, frankly, insecurities. Mm-hmm. I think that was what the case was in this with this thing. But again, I don't want to belittle the concerns. I think that while it is a concern, you can magnify it out of all proportion. And I think that's exactly what happened. And I think it was pushed. I think we were goaded into doing that by people who don't have our best interests at heart at all.
Right. We have a question from Samurai Squirrel. I think he's, do you see that one in the chat?
Hold on. Let's see.
It's a big yellow one.
Hold on.
And the question is BPS, do you believe in NoFap? Can you do a video on what constant sex drug degeneracy does to the brain and personality? Merry Christmas. Yes, actually, I will. I've kind of touched on that one before, and I got an avalanche of shit from the MGTOW community. Not that I care. I mean, I get a shit from all kinds of people. I get shit from the New York Times. So it doesn't really bother me. But yes, I will, indeed.
Sorry, I'm just scanning the chat because I lost track of it there when we were talking.
Right, no worries. Another one I just want to address. I see this this character obscure being. Yes, Lauren is one of them. Echoes. Hold on.
No, she's not.
Okay, I spent almost a week every day with her, and I can tell you, not every day, but several days, and I can tell you she's definitely on board, on our team, and is a very, very well-spoken, well-thought, and very, very pleasant, nice woman. You know, and it's just this she's been blacked, she's been, you know, she's working for, she's controlled opposition. Yes, this stuff is just not true. I just don't think it out because it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think any of these these allegations about her ethnic background, I think, are simply untrue. What is it again, Simonson or whatever? It's one of the most common.
Yeah, but as far as I understand, Simonson, it's a very, very common surname.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most common surnames in that country. So, again, it's just not that entire thing has been manufactured by people either on our own side or our enemies who, right. No, again, they didn't lose everything in the Holocaust. Yeah. Their property was confiscated by the Nazis for the war effort, and that's why they left.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, they were not, that this allegation is not true.
Yeah.
Now, leaving that aside, because I mean, her case is unique, and I don't know what she'll do. She's, as far as I know, she is not an ethno-nationalist. As far as I know, she's definitely not come out as one. So, you know, give her a break. I mean, what if she had come out as one, then you could hold her to that standard henceforth. But even then, you couldn't go on about what she did when she was 16, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it was basically just a huge feeding frenzy, and it was horrible to see. And from my own point of view, it just... What I didn't like about it was that it just demoralized the community and me, honestly. Yeah. And this is exactly what the point of it was. That's exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So don't rise to it. You know, look, this is what I said in my video. Always think what is good for the community.
Yeah.
Is it good for the community to be turning on the prominent women within it? No. That's obviously not going to be good for morale. So, or for getting things, you know, reaching the public. So, you know, be practical about this.
No, I agree.
Anyway, let's see if there are any other questions for you. If there aren't any other questions for Black Pigeon.
There was one question that I said I'd get back to, and it was a question, and we can go after that to some other questions that might be for me. And I apologize as... My faculties seem to be leaving me, as I am quite tired, but I'm enjoying the conversation, so I'm going to go with it till we finish. The question was something about along the lines of why is Switzerland neutral, or what is different about them? As I understand, Switzerland is a country, it's a very good example of how diversity can work. And the reason diversity works there is because the populations are separated by physical barriers. There's actually a very good, on this that I included in a video that I made almost a year ago. And it was the front of the thumbnail is Justin Trudeau. And it says the title of the video was something along the lines of how diversity is not a strength, but it's a weakness, something like that. And the idea is that the Swiss, they've got Italians, they've got French, they've got Germans, but they're all in their little valleys. And they all have a very, very large degree of autonomous rule, if you will. And they vote on absolutely everything of major importance, including things like...
The cantons.
And they basically vote on pretty much anything of merit. So the thing about them is they have referendums for all kinds of ideas and all kinds of things that go along in terms of their political discourse. And because of that, they have understood, you know, and they've also gone into things like some unscrupulous banking. But I think that they wisely understood that as a small country, the only way to secure themselves was being, I think their entire defense posture for the last couple hundred years was the idea of being a porcupine. So pretty much everybody in their country is armed. Everyone in their country has military training. Well, for the most part, not everybody, for the most part. And they have a very, very robust, able to handle regional problems in a much better way than a country that's run from the top down. So that would be my explanation for that. And
would you say that model would work in other European countries, or do you think it depends on the, you know, high IQ stock of Switzerland?
No, I think it generally depends on having physical and boundaries between your countries. I mean, even if you look at Scotland is pretty much defined by the mountains. I mean, once you hit Edinburgh, you can see them. Right. You know, countries are generally, I mean, this is why the Russians will never give up Chechnya. This is why the Russians want to have the Crimea. Geography, the world's problems, the world's maps, the world's tensions, the world's geopolitical situation. It's defined by the geography in which people live. I mean, the United States, the reason it's so much wealthier than any other country in the hemisphere, the North and South America, is because it has 12 navigable rivers. It's got one of the largest areas.
The word is actually navigable. The word is navigable.
I was right. Okay, the first. I was right in the first place. Okay. As I told you, my faculties are leaving me. And I should tell people I have very, very large jet lag at this point. And somebody's asking me, what do you think about Iranians? I would support them against the Saudis. Generally, they seem as a people a lot more. I'll get back to our other thing, but I kind of flying around. The question was, what do you think about Iranians? I would support them insofar as any kind of problem they had with.
Yeah, I'm increasingly a fan of Iran as well, I have to say.
Yeah. Do I sip fluoride water? No, I don't. What's my ethnic background? It's European. The largest component would be from the British Isles. I did one of these DNA tests, but I didn't put it in my real name. I have Eastern European, not very much. I have a little bit 12 or 15% Southern, which would be like Southern France. And what else? I had middle, that would be like Hungary, German. And I had a bit of whatever that is, Western European. So yeah, it's I'm a mutt for the most part, but mostly British. So that to answer that question.
Actually, on that note, how did you feel about the British climate? Because some people who are like majority British, it's a funny thing to say. I'm just putting this out there. Americans and Canadians who are majority British tend to go to Britain and suddenly feel, oh, this suits me.
Oh, well, yeah. Where I grew up, I grew up in Vancouver in British Columbia, and it has a very, 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 very similar climate. Very gray all the time, pretty dark in the winter, rains a shit ton of a lot. Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I had no problem. I liked it. You know, people are all complaining. I thought it was nice. You know, I had no problem with it. Like, just when I was in York, it was just like being... when I lived as a kid, you know, it's just, okay, there's frost on the ground, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, bite in the air. It's quite nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is nice. Okay. So what else? What other questions? Can you do a video on Australian politics?
I probably could, but it would take me a lot longer. I have some very good friends of mine that live in Australia, and I've been there a few times. I really like Australia. The only thing I would have pause with living there is just the summer times there are just pretty brutal from what I understand. If I moved there, it'd probably be to Tasmania just because it seems to have a more mild climate than the other parts of the country. But yeah, I probably could do something on it. I'd probably have to get some help with some people. And yeah, just answering chilling account. Yes, I was in York for a number of days and, it's one of my favorite cities in the country, to be honest with you. I like the size. I like the people. It's fucking beautiful, and it's probably one of the most historic towns I've ever been in the UK. You know, a lot of just with the city walls and you know, a lot of that sort of stuff.
Someone's asking, who is your favorite author?
I've got a lot of them. The one I quite liked for a long time, there's a guy named Daniel Quinn. He wrote a series of books. The original one was Ishmael. The next one was called The Story of Bee. And another one of them was called My Ishmael. And he was having his philosophical musings on human society, whether it be the natural state of humans as hunter-gatherers versus agriculturalists and our role on this planet and how we interact with it depending on what type of life that we choose for ourselves or are chosen for us. Another author I like is Graham Hancock. The reason I like him is I spent a lot of time when I was younger traveling a lot around the Mediterranean, and I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I spent a lot of time in Syria, if you can believe it, before it obviously fell apart, but all throughout the region. And I spent a lot of time in Egypt, and he did a lot of very interesting books on his ideas on the ancient Egyptian monuments insofar as the dating and a lot of the things that just don't add up in your orthodox Egyptology. But then he moved on from that and he looked into ancient humans and his ideas on hallucinogens and their being a catalyst, they being a catalyst for a lot of the, his belief, a lot of the attributes that we see in ourselves. I mean, the idea is Cro-Magnon man was this basically a shuttling ape. He didn't have any, the Cro-Magnon man biologically was no different from us. If you put him in a suit, you know, you wouldn't know he was anything, you know, a shape. Wouldn't know he was any different from the average guy at the pub. But the thing is human beings, insofar as things like art, religion, ceremonies, a lot of the organization that humans do just sort of came out of nowhere, out of just absolute nowhere. And he delves into that in another book of his called Supernatural. So, I mean, that's both of those, Daniel Quinn, the other one being Hancock. I recommend them all.
Okay, somebody was asking, what is your age roughly?
In my 30s.
Right. And what are your favorite movies?
Generally, movies are not something that you just get all intelligent about. And I like science fiction. You said that you had a friend that dragged you out to see Interstellar. That was one of my favorite movies for the last 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, I won't even go see Star Opera anymore, Star Wars. I mean, it's just not even science fiction at this point. It's propaganda mixed with, it's just crap. So insofar as movies go, I really like science fiction. I also really like historical dramas. So, I mean, the good movies I've seen this year, I can't think of any. I think the only two movies I've seen this year, oh no, wait a minute. I saw the Blade Runner 2049 and that was really good.
Oh, right. And, tell me about that. I haven't seen it yet.
I don't want to give any spoilers, but it was so good. I think it was better than the original actually. And actually Harrison Ford wasn't even necessary in the movie. I mean, it could have run without him. And, so
Was his performance good? Because I have to say, I thought he was fucking terrible in The Force Awakens as Han Solo.
Absolutely terrible in that. I think he was terrible in the last Indiana Jones. I think he's just there for the paycheck, right? He didn't seem to really... Yeah, his performance wasn't very good. But it was a great movie. The only two movies I've seen this year were Trainspotting 2, which I thought was brilliant as well. Just the way it's a movie about people reaching midlife and reflecting on their youth. And it was very, very, very poignant.
Okay. Okay. Someone asked, if you like Hancock, have you also experienced substances?
I'm not going to lie. Yes, I have, a number of them. I've never taken a needle, obviously. And I've never taken, you know, things like meth. But yes, I have experienced hallucinogens. And they are, they can be very life-changing for the positive. Yes, absolutely. And, I'm not ashamed to say that. I think human beings have the intrinsic right to be able to explore their own consciousness. The government should not be allowed to dictate to you what you can do with your body and especially your consciousness. And this is your life. And I believe that people, if they were able to do it in a controlled way, I mean, I did it as a young person and I did it, you know, not even as a young person, but I did it in ways where I wasn't trying to party with people. I was actually looking for insight. And I think that's the way people should approach things like hallucinogens, because I think hallucinogens are a gateway to understanding not only yourself, but the reality in which we live and also the consciousness that we all share. It's one of the largest aspects of this reality that we just seem to not even think about, but it's probably the most crucial.
Oh God, I had a hangout last night with Mouthy Buddha, where he was talking about consciousness. I mean, maybe the two of you could have an interesting conversation on that. It wasn't something I was accustomed to discussing, honestly, so I didn't really know what to say to him. I was sort of improvising. Someone else asks, what do you think about a nuclear North Korea?
Well, to be honest, I think North Korea is a country that's not a threat to anyone. It's an this you could also use in your arguments about IQ. It's an impoverished country of around 23 million people. It spends probably the majority of its GDP on its military. And because of its recent escalation in its missile program, it's been basically everything but the kitchen sink in terms of sanctions have been thrown at it. I think the country is what it's trying to do is it's trying to legitimize its regime. And I'm not too worried about it because what the United States is doing, as far as I can tell, is it's doing exactly what it did with the Soviet Union. They'll tell the North Koreans and Kim Jong-il, go ahead, fire your missiles, keep firing. Fire them every single day if you like. We're going to park two aircraft carriers on one in the Yellow Sea and one in the Sea of Japan, and we'll just stay here and watch you. And it generally will make the North Koreans, not generally, it does make the North Koreans very, 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 very unnerved. Kim Jong-il himself has gained something along the lines of 30 kilograms since he ascended. No, excuse me, more than that, something like 50, 60 kilograms since he ascended the proverbial throne of North Korea. And he supposedly doesn't sleep in the same bed. He changes beds because he's paranoid that the United States have marked him for death, which they've obviously, whether or not publicly, but probably through channels, have threatened. And what he's doing is he's trying to make himself a porcupine, making the taking of his throne very, very costly, very dear. But he's not going to provoke something that incurs the wrath of the United States military. So, I mean, I live in Tokyo, and I'm not worried about it at all. So I think if you start hearing jingoism coming out of the halls of Washington and in the mainstream media, don't buy it, because North Korea is not a threat to anyone, because this man, Kim Jong-un, wants to give up his harems, his cigarettes, and his, you know, sumptuous private sushi chef. The guy is literally the god emperor of his country, not in the way Trump is, you know, it's used as more of an endearing title. In North Korea, it is the real deal. He is their god emperor, and he's treated as such. And I don't think he's going to want to give that up for what, you know, he's got no chance, and he knows it. So yeah, not at all. Not worried.
All right. I've got five more questions for you. You can rattle through them as quick as you like. Someone asks if BPS is a fan of Metal Gear Solid. I see influences in his work.
Not especially. I play video games on the train because it's a train city, and I play the ones that are on your cell phone for the most part. But the larger games I've kind of given up only because they just take way too much of my time. So I do play them on my phone because when you're on the train, you know, what else are you going to do, right? If you've got 30 minutes to kill. So I quite enjoy games on the cell phones, but not so much anymore. I wonder what kind of influence they've seen in that. I'm kind of curious.
Well, hopefully he can tell us and tag me in it when you do, and I'll bring it back to BPS. So here's another question. As a former leftist, how do you think we should convert more leftists to our side? How to approach them and red pill them?
Well, I mean, I have to be honest. I think I've probably said to you before, I finished university, my first degree as a dyed-in-the-wool, not Marxist, but, you know, I had been thoroughly gaslighted by the university system. And but I always had an underlying understanding of right and wrong. And I think the best way to approach people that are, you know, you want to proverbial or, you know, the proverbial red pill is to probably approach them with understanding and talking with them rather than talking to them and discussing why they believe what they believe and where they come to the conclusions they come to and how they come to them. And I think the best way is just to lead people step by step into reality. Because the thing is you don't want to, I don't think that people that are on the left are bad people. I think that they're just people that have been indoctrinated by the system and they have been told that this is the best way to be within the current paradigm and the current narrative that we live in. And if you want to be a successful, good person, that you have to behave and think in this way. And all you need to show them that is this paradigm and these narratives that you're being forced to enact in your life are not necessarily for your betterment. And especially insofar as the betterment and the longevity of your kids and their kids. So right, okay. With openness and dialogue is what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so too. I mean, it does seem to work. You know, I get loads of people who say that they were a leftist or a libertarian or something until they found my channel. And I mean, no one says that it was an instant conversion, but that was the start for them. So I do think that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that the more combative attitude, it just repels
people. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, okay, how do other... This guy's been asking this question. I wasn't going to ask this one, but he's very insistent, so do what you can with it.
Mm-hmm.
How do other European countries get the same gun rights as the Czech Republic and Switzerland? The reason I wasn't going to ask is I think it's, you know, it's all speculation. But anyway,
Okay. Well, I can't speculate on how they do it, but I can speculate on why Western countries don't have it, but Eastern countries like the Czech Republic, for example, do, is that these countries in Eastern Europe were basically shafted by the British and by the Americans and by the Western allies at the end of the Second World War. The entire pretext of the Second World War was the invasion of Poland and alliances that the UK had with Poland to defend it. And at the end of the Second World War, they just handed it over to Russia and threw them behind for the next 50, 60 years. Well, not 60, maybe 50 years. And the thing is these people, I mean, these kinds of memories don't go away quickly, and they understand that they had been shafted by the West, taken over by the East. And these are countries that have long and proud traditions and long and proud memories. And I think they understand that as a people, they're not going to allow other countries to dictate to them how they will live and how they won't and how they will survive as a people or they won't survive as a people, because they'll fight for it, because they've already had the shit sandwich thrown on them by both sides. So I think the reason is because they're in the middle. Western Europe, they were given the Marshall Plan after World War II. They became wealthy. The East became poor under communism. So the West became basically a land of sheep. And I would say that the difference is an experience in why countries like Poland and why countries like the Czech Republic and why countries like Hungary are pushing back against the EU, where countries like Holland, France, I don't know, Belgium,
Germany.
I mean, there are some people in them, but a lot of people are just too comfortable and have had too easy a life, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely the thing, isn't it? It's decadence. Okay, yeah. Somebody has explained Metal Gear Solid has long cutscenes with beautiful editing and graphics overlaying speeches where the protagonist explains how the Patriots control and manipulate nations and borders, etc.
I see. Okay. That's probably just a coincidence, I think.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Flak 88 Shockwave, you're quite right. I apologize for delaying with that question. All right. Have you got anything to say about the Ainu people in Japan? Ainu. Are they keeping up with modernity or are they nearly gone?
They're nearly gone. I think full-blooded Ainu people are probably, you know, in maybe the low thousands. You know, there's not many of them left. They're kind of like the Native Americans of Japan. They're quite interesting. As far as I can understand about them, is they are basically a lost Caucasoid tribe that just landed over there in prehistory and were the first people on the islands, much like the Eskimos landed in northern North America. They are essentially, as far as I understand, the ones that are still full-blooded, they are a Caucasoid prehistoric tribe that just basically landed in Japan. But the problem with the Japanese is they don't accept the idea of their country having anything other. Their country is not only an ethno state, but even the people that aren't ethnically Japanese are ethnically Japanese, according to them. So there's no separation. Right. The assimilation of the Ainu is pretty much all but done. There's a few of them up in Hokkaido still, but not many.
Right. Okay. Do you think you will ever leave Japan?
Oh yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a place I really like it. I mean, it's a very on the journey in life. It's taken me there and I really do like it, but it's not somewhere that I would settle for the rest of my life. No, absolutely not. I am tied up for the next little while in commitments that I've made there. You know, vis-a-vis, you know, things that I'm doing with some people there. But no, it's not somewhere. I mean, to be honest, at the time, as I'm talking to you guys right now, I'm in Spain. And I would give my left nut to live in this country. It's cheap. It's beautiful. It's warm. Everyone's friendly. I mean, it's just, it's a great country. I mean, but, you know, we shall see where it takes me. I think I'll be going somewhere. I'm not sure where. You know, I'm a rolling stone. I think I told you this last year, you know, and the longer I'm in a place, I start gathering moss. And I've been a rolling stone since I finished school. My life journey has never been one to stay in one place for the rest of my life or one place. I've lived in probably more than a dozen countries and visited over 100. So it's just part of my particular psyche.
Right. Okay.
Shilling account, BPS, come back to York. I will, probably in the spring. Sorry, next question.
Okay. Should the West bring back national service?
I've said this 100 times, absolutely. I think national service is one of the greatest ways in which you can forge an identity. And forging an identity, especially on the youth, it's not only important, it's almost essential that the lifeblood of a country be renewed in its youth. And I think very good examples of this can be used are South Korea. Every man has to do national service. And another good country that will send the chat into a frenzy is Israel. They have even the women take it. And you don't generally have to do national service only because you're a man or a woman or only in the military. You could also do it in things like ambulance driving or helping out in elderly homes or in some way or shape or form. It doesn't necessarily have to be because, you know, some people would be conscientious objectors to being in an institution where you're forced to kill people on command. But yes, I think national service and also national service where you're not paid like a mercenary as they are in Britain or the United States, you know, tempted with all of these kinds of goodies and things. I think national service should be like along the lines of the Turks. You know, they get just enough to survive. And if they want to do better, they've got to get money from their families. You know, if they want to have that beer on the weekend, they'll have to use whatever they made that week, their $10, their $20, or they got to get help from their families. Builds big, better families, builds stronger families, stronger communities, stronger countries. Absolutely. I think so.
Yeah. I agree for what it's worth. The only thing I would be concerned with is that you would be teaching them, like if it was proper national service, that you would be teaching them skills that they could later use in leftist agitation and activism, because they could be incubating their own enemy.
But I honestly don't. I think if you did have national service, though, it would go a long way to decreasing the power and influence of the far left. Because, no, I mean, it's. I think it's that's his name, the guy that plays in Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. And he went. He was like a. I think he was a fairly not a big movie star back in the, I think maybe the 70s or 80s. I can't remember how old he is. But then he went on some drug binge, and he ended up in jail for a while. And he says, you know, you can't come out of jail being a leftist. You know, you just can't. You can't come out of jail being a liberal.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people that do national service and they do these kinds of these organizations, they join these organizations, I think it would go a long way to diffusing and destroying the cancer that is the far left. Yeah,
I agree. Okay, two final questions. Do you have experience or interest in Zen Buddhism?
I don't have a lot of experience in Zen Buddhism, but insofar as Buddhism in general, I've studied it fairly thoroughly. And I would say, insofar as people that don't believe in God, but tend to still have spirituality and are searching for a deeper meaning in this life, in this consciousness, you can find it in Buddhism. And that's, I mean, it's a very wide ranging question, but yes, I'm pretty familiar with it. I've spent a lot of time studying. I spent a lot of time studying Islam when I lived in the Middle East. You know, not studying it while I was living in the Middle East, you know, was why I tended to not like it very much. You know, seeing the end result in the societies that it built. My favorite Game of Thrones character is, I liked, let me think about that. Last question.
Oh, I was just going to ask about the Twitter purge.
Ah, the Twitter purge. Yeah, actually, I was aware that it was going to happen on the 18th, but I didn't know who was being taken down. It was actually you telling me before we got on this this chat, and I think it's absolutely disgusting. It's absolutely political, and what it is it's trying to get in the way of people that give very legitimate arguments, and they give them in very, very, very articulate, well-mannered, and very thorough in their presentations. And they could change too many minds. And using the parlance and the puns of the day, they got to shut it down.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
I'm just checking now. I haven't been purged yet. Neither have you. No. Neither has my friend Morgoth. All right, okay, we'll see we'll see how long that lasts. And I'm just waiting for it to happen. You know, I think what we're going to end up doing is just going to Gab. That seems like the best option just now. Mm-hmm. I think it is just, as you said, it's just disgusting. It's so obviously political. The first one that I heard of being purged was Jared Taylor, who you could never say that Jared Taylor is offensive. I mean, obviously his ideas trouble people, but he's not offensive in the sense of, you know, insulting people or using ridiculous
language. Jared Taylor is a very well-educated man. I think he's trilingual. He grew up in Japan. He's got a great respect for the Japanese people. He doesn't hate anyone. He just wants to have. And the thing is I'll tell you, I kind of understand what he's going at, because having lived in Japan, he probably got the same ideas that I had about nationality, about nationalism, about having a stable society. You know, if you talk to Japanese people and you tell them the kinds of things that Western people get themselves upset about, you know, about privilege or about, you know, name it, in the grab bag of fucking stupidity that the left spews out in their fucking verbal flatulence, you know, they look at you with these dumbfounded eyes going, what are you talking about? What sane society would talk about this shit? And the thing is having lived in a society that is cohesive, and I'm not part of it. I'm always an outsider. They'll never accept me. I'm not a weeb, like to call me. going to be accepted. I know I'm not going to ever be part of it in any meaningful way, but you can still experience it and understand it. So for example, you could be, you know, a beautiful 20-year-old woman, half naked, drunk, walking down the street at 2 o'clock in the morning, and nobody would harass you. You know, you can do these. I mean, if you lose your wallet, you just have to go to the police will call you up the next day and say somebody turned it in and all the money is still there. And this is not bullshit. It exists. And it exists because it has it's a high trust society. I imagine places, I remember getting emails from people when I did a video talking about Japan, and people were, you know, emailing me from places like the Shetlands and Iceland. And they're saying, yeah, it's exactly the same here. Well, it's the reason it's exactly the same is because there is they live in high trust societies. But yeah, what happened to Jared Taylor was absolutely fucking disgusting. It is, because the man is absolutely not in any way, shape, or form an offensive person, and he is very, very well educated and well spoken. So it's absolutely a political assassination.
Yes, indeed it is. And it's embarrassing how obvious it is. But as you said before we went on air, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're not even ashamed anymore.
They're not even ashamed of their bias at this point. They don't even care anymore. They don't even care. And that's a scary thing, to be honest with you. They don't even fucking care at this point. Yeah, so.
Wow, someone's just linked me to the Purge list so far today. Jared Taylor, American Renaissance. Michael Hill, I've not heard of him. League of the South, Hunter Wallace, I know who he is. Based Atlanta, I don't know who that is. Generation Identity, and that's Martin Selner's organization. You know, yeah. I mean, they were completely civilized. They were never offensive, as far as I could see. Traditional Workers Party, Matt Parrott, Britain First, and Jada Franson and Paul Golding off Britain First. They were the ones who were... Jada Franson was retweeted by Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and now she's been purged. Vanguard America and Jeff Shoup.
Apparently, is there anyone on the left on that list? Anyone, even one?
Not as far as I know.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's disgusting. Yeah. It's disgusting. They're not even trying to hide it at this point.
It's infuriating. But you know, this was always on the cards. It's, you know, it's going to happen. We shouldn't be surprised.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the problem with this is that they're even trying to make it difficult for things like Gab to gain traction, you know, because they're banning them from things like the Apple store and the Google store. And most people use their cell phone for, I think, more than 50% of internet traffic now, right? So they're not even allowing people to have other places to go to express themselves. And if you try to suppress people for too long, this never works out in the long run, shape or form, that doesn't end in a way that's positive for anyone. I'll just answer one more question from Mr. Obsfelder. BPS, are you in favor of Quebec independence? Yes, I think the Quebecois should get their own country and get away from Canada, to be honest. If I was a Quebecois, I would.
Seems like the simpler thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, shall we call it a day there?
I guess we should. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for letting me come on your channel. I mean, I was surprised it's been a year since we've had a public discussion. I guess we just talk in private, so it doesn't feel like it's been a year. But
yeah. I mean, we were going to do that one in about the rage thing back in whenever it was. But whenever in the event I did my own video and then it started to blow over. So but yeah, we should do something more regularly. I know that people were really looking forward to this one and they enjoyed last year's.
Thanks very much for having me on your channel though. I appreciate it and introducing me to your audience.
And you're welcome, and thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
No worries at all. No worries at all. Thanks so much. And thanks to your audience for sticking with us through the time that we've done this.
Yeah, I think this has been the longest one so far, actually. I'm not sure. I think we have been going for 2 hours or
it looks like
damn near. All right. Okay, then. And we're up to, 1,100 viewers. All right. That's probably the most popular one so far. All right, well, thank you very much, Black Pigeon Speaks, and obviously everyone knows your channel, but it's linked below anyway, and thank you to the audience for listening. And the next one is Eric the Heathen, who's I think just starting up. And I'll see you in about 20 minutes for that one. So okay,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Bye-bye.